Hello and welcome everyone to this episode of Real Asian Podcast. I'm Renee. I'm stepping in for Ray because this is a film that I absolutely love, and I am joined by someone who probably also absolutely loves this film too, Baldwin.
Absolutely. Hello, everybody. Real quick, just jumping in from another multiverse.
Yes, and we're here today to talk about Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. And I have to say, Baldwin, thank you so much for joining me on this, because this film needs to be talked about.
Definitely. I mean, I had to talk about it right after I saw it. It's just so much to go through, for sure.
Exactly. So, you know, I don't even think we were planning on talking about this, like, in our normal, just, like, episodes that we, you know, no. What did we want to talk about? Yeah, exactly. So we basically just, like, got on the horn and was like, someone needs to join us. We need to do this. And, like, I guess it's just us. That's totally fine. But so Everything Everywhere All at Once had just screened at South by Southwest. I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it, because this is really the first time everyone's kind of just, like, back in person, you know, since the start of the pandemic. I mean, like, cautiously about that as well, you know. But, and this film, directed by Daniels, they previously did Swiss Army Man, which starred Daniel Radcliffe, and everyone who hasn't seen it, you probably have heard of the Farting Dead Guy movie, and that is but before that, Daniels, they actually did, they did music videos, they actually even recorded, like, an episode of Nora from Queens, which is stars Awkwafina, and so, you know, this is their sophomore feature film, I guess. Like, for me personally, this is probably my favorite film, you know, and it's really hard for me because I almost never have a favorite film, but I think this one tops pretty much almost everything out there that I love. And on top of that, it's like, it is an art house film in a sense. I mean, it is kind of fairly mainstream, but this is, you know, okay, Baldwin, just tell me about it. Let's tell the audience, for those who haven't heard about it, just break it down.
All right, I'll give you a description or synopsis of the movie. Just a little intro, because we would need, like, a seminar to get into the whole summary of it.
But no, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So at the beginning of the movie, we're introduced to Evelyn Wong, who's played by Michelle Yeoh, and she's a very distracted, stressed out, middle-aged Chinese immigrant woman who's frantically running a laundromat, and she's preparing to meet with a tax auditor while also preparing for her Lunar New Year party at her laundromat. And there's just a lot on her mind. She and her husband, Waymond, played by Ke Huy Quan, they're in an unhappy marriage, while her relationship with her daughter, who's played by Stephanie Hsu, her name's Joy, their relationship is also actually fractured because of this generational differences, and she wants to bring her girlfriend to the Lunar New Year party, but Evelyn is concerned about pleasing her conservative grand or her conservative father, who's also visiting Gong Gong, who's played by James Hong. So they go and meet with the auditor, who's played by none other than Jamie Lee Curtis, and her husband, Waymond, suddenly changes his personality, grabs a hold of her, and drops this insane piece of news. Apparently, his body is being hijacked by a version of Waymond from a completely different universe, and he explains that there are infinite universes where Evelyn has made different choices throughout her life, each leading to a different life that she's lived. So each of these universes has a different version of Evelyn who's done and accomplished different things, and this Waymond, who's called Alpha Waymond from the Alpha Universe, explains that there's this great evil spreading throughout reality named Jobu Tobaki, and it's threatening to annihilate all life, and he's searching to match this great evil with an even greater good to bring back balance to the multiverse. And we find out that this Evelyn Wang is the hero that he's searching for, and she might just be the potential savior of all existence. And the reason for that, we find out, is because she's the only version of Evelyn who hasn't reached any sort of potential in her life or accomplished any of her dreams, compared to the other versions who have become accomplished in one way or another. And because of this Evelyn's averageness, she ends up having the most potential out of them all. So Waymond is trying to pull her out of this tax audit that's currently happening and join him into this war. But all of a sudden, it turns out that the war has come to them in the present universe because Jobu Tsubaki and her minions are also verse jumping, just like Waymond, into the present universe to try to stop her from succeeding. So we're getting different versions of Deirdre, Gong Gong, and everyone around them just verse jumping and trying to kill her. And so, spoiler alert, it turns out that Jobu Tsubaki is actually a version of her daughter from the Alpha universe that has gained this type of omnipotent power to access all versions of herself at the same time. Luckily, Waymond gives this present Evelyn a device that lets her access all of the other Evelyns and all of their skills. And basically, she's able to do this through what looks like a Bluetooth headset device. And she jumps to each one of her alternate selves. And at times, she actually gets to live in that universe for a bit. And then she jumps back to the main universe with the acquired skills of her alternate self. And yeah, we get some like really crazy, insane skills from these different versions of her. One of them is a martial arts master, but she's also a beloved actress, a bad businesswoman. She's a chef. She's a hot dog handed lover.
Hot dog fingers.
Yeah. And by that, I mean, she actually has hot dogs in place of her fingers. Yeah. And then in one of the universes, she's actually even a metamorphic rock with googly eyes.
So okay, that was a really moving part of the film, though.
Yeah, that was a big part of the film. But the rest of the movie, we just follow her as she traverses through these different lives that she's lived, trying to stop Jobu Tsubaki, while also trying to reconcile all of her regrets and her relationships with her family members. So that's the introduction to the movie. And like I said, it'll just take a whole class to talk about everything else that happens.
Absolutely. So, you know, this is my big takeaway. This is the big take, right? Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me that, like, the multiverse is all the rage right now. You know, what used to be a theoretical concept and, like, quantum physics, basically, mm-hmm. is now this mainstream storytelling device. And the audience fully accepts this. This is insane to me because... So what's interesting about this is, like, for me personally, I feel like Daniel Kwan and Daniel Schreinhardt basically made this film for me. I mean, like, I already talk yes. about this with mm-hmm. I already talk about the part where, like, oh, when I do something wrong or almost nearly miss out on this, like, life altering issue, I'm like, you know what, there's another version of me that probably died from that, you know? So
definitely. Yeah. Multiverse is definitely trending right now.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really interesting to me because, so I guess, like, thank you, Marvel Universe, MCU, mm-hmm. for being able to mainstream this idea. Like, if MCU didn't do this, I think this film would have had a harder time for people to understand. But it's interesting right. because the Daniels, they've been working on this for over like 5 years, right? It wasn't like something they just did like over the like last year. Mm-hmm. They started writing it. They barely started shooting it right before the pandemic. And then some of the last pickup scenes that they did included, the scene where Evelyn and Waymond are in the car trying to talk about divorce. And, you know, fully masked up and everything. But after that, like, they basically just, like, edited this entire film for the last 2 years mm-hmm. During the pandemic. So, you know, I definitely feel like, okay, so going back to my big take, mm-hmm. They've basically been able to prove that they're masters of evoking, like, just the profound from the absurd, right? Mm-hmm. You can see that if for anyone who has seen Swiss Army Man. And so seeing them kind of return for their sophomore film, and finding, you know, this parallel universe and everything everywhere all at once, fusing all these different infinite possibilities. But the core question is, what if I made different choices in my life, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And she asks, she at one point when Alpha Waymond takes over, and she's like, no, give me back my husband. I need to tell him how good my life could have been without him. I was shit.
Jeez, they really went there, right?
I know. And nothing was off the table. So,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I definitely feel like as as this film follows Evelyn, which you so like very beautifully kind of just like laid out in the synopsis, this Chinese American immigrant with a failing laundromat business, you know, like I feel very close to that myself. My grandfather himself was also a laundromat owner and it went under, and it was just like, it's so hard to be able to maintain something like this in a community that already kind of doesn't really want you and sees you as an other. Mm-hmm. And then also, and on top of that, you know, Evelyn has her daughter who's moody and angsty and,
yeah,
and messy and just like, and aimless. Mm-hmm. And that relationship that they have, you know, and it's just like, she says it in the film. She's like, all while her, you know, her childhood, I worried that she, you know, that she would become like me. But she is me.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes at such a pivotal, moment in the film where all the different races. So basically, what's interesting to me is like, you explore the relationship deeper and deeper as the multiverse goes. I remember watching this interview with Daniels saying how the first half, the first third of the film is about trying to teach you how to watch the rest of the film.
Yeah, that's right? True.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's like training wheels, and they're trying to like, okay, so if I do this thing, these weird things, then I could potentially verse jump. And then they show all the hijinks that kind of come with that. And even so, Hot Dog Fingers actually does make a reason to be in there. And so I actually had a chance to see this film twice. And
Awesome.
Yeah, and so this is something you kind of have to experience in the theater, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
There were just so many laughs and there were so many screams. You know, there was one part in particular where the first screening that I went to, this when they have to put the butt plug.
Yeah, there's a butt plug in the movie, guys, by the way.
There is. And he jumps and he like lands on it. As soon as that screen, there was someone, there's a guy in front, just off to the side, who was like, oh, it was like a visceral feeling of like that bug of landing on a bug plug. So
yeah, I definitely feel it.
It was just absolutely zany. And I think, you know, the big takeaway going back into it, you know, I'm sporting my Jobu Tabaki makeup today. That our listeners can't see this. The way the cinematography not only has this epic martial arts scenes, these tender drama, family dramas, and each one being very different. The Daniels even said, like, they actually even changed, like, the camera work and things like that. The framing, mm-hmm. one was letterbox, one's 4:3, right? They actually changed it for each one of these different scenes. And one of my favorites, of course, is the neon-soaked Wong Kar-wai romance.
Absolutely. Getting the feels, right?
Yes. I was just like, oh my God, goosebumps just thinking about it. It was so perfect and amazing. And I was like, oh my God, did they actually get Christopher to come in and shoot these scenes? Or did they just created themselves? Because like the cinematography in those moments, the scenes, the setups, the angles, I mean, like, oh, I mean, it was CEO Wayman was just oozing sex appeal, and it was amazing because he was short round in Indiana Jones, and so Ke Kwan coming back and just absolutely, it wasn't even a comeback, it's a return, you know, like. And I think that's one of the things, you know, checking out the Entertainment Weekly interview with the cast and Daniels, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis says to Ke, this isn't a comeback for you. You know, this is a return. You know, the fact that you had to he had to retire for the last 20 years. And because there weren't Asian American men roles and they weren't going to make it for him. Right.
Yeah.
So like, you know, and that's a lifetime. That could normally be career killing. I would feel. So the fact that he hasn't been in front of the camera and he absolutely just killed it,
killed every role that he had in that movie, because he has different roles, he just nails every single one.
I watched this GQ interview with Michelle Yeoh,
yeah,
and she gets tearful talking about this film because her career spanning over two decades, basically, she said she felt finally someone sees her to be able to make, to do this kind of, so the fact that she is, and honestly, like we've watched Michelle Yeoh's career all these years growing up with her,
mm-hmm.
and where she even, she did also take, retire a couple of times actually, because she just wasn't getting, a slew of reasons why she had to retire.
Mm-hmm.
So for her to be able to have this role where it really encompasses, these are all the different things that she's done in her career, and it all culminates into this. And, you know, if you're only watching one film, watch this, because it's basically like watching all the films, because it's so
mm-hmm.
jam-packed. But it didn't feel, even with the jam-packedness of that feeling, there's still room to breathe. There were times when basically there was complete silence and the audience together had to read, you know, there wasn't any dialogue, no sound at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the audience was willing to sit there and do it, you know? So those moments to pause helped to really drive the storyline, that the underlying intergenerational trauma, you know, that cycle of needing to break it. Right. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. you know, I, there's actually quite a few movies that have come out recently, like Turning Red's another one that has that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I felt like Jobu Tabaki, like that nihilism that just takes over, that dark cynicism that says none of this matters. Why are we doing it anyway? And that feeling of just, why can't you love me? Why can't mm-hmm. you just love me for who I am?
Mm-hmm.
And Evelyn saying, I have my opinions of you, but I will always want to be near you, right? I'm going to cry thinking about it. I'm trying to, no. guys.
I definitely shed a tear at that point in the movie. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So there's this running joke that I have with Raymond. Ray, our producer.
Ray,
that I am on a mission to get him to watch a film where he actually cries, because he says he's never cried. He's got maybe a little bit kind of choked up, but never ever shed a tear. And he's like, I've surgically removed those, guys. I don't know how to cry. I was like, this will make you cry. You have to watch this film.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting is, like, yes, they are Chinese immigrants. Yes, it's an Asian family. And while a lot of these themes, like, it's more like it's just a deeper layer if you are Asian, right?
Mm-hmm,
but it doesn't mean that this is only an exclusively Asian kind of storyline. I think this is something that transcends across multiple different cultures. So good job to Daniels. I loved this film, and I'm just shouting from the rooftops. Everyone needs to watch this.
Yes. I love that. I love how you are describing, like, your feelings about the movie, because, like, I agree 100%. This is one of the best movies I've seen in a while. And, like, that's saying a lot, because I watch a ton of movies, but, like, it was insane how much I enjoyed this movie. And, like, I'm looking at it on IMDb right now, and I'm really proud to say that it's holding a rating of 9 out of 10, which is, like, awesome. You rarely ever get that. But yeah, I definitely, like, feel what you said about how it speaks to you, because I love it. I love how it really connects to the experience of being the child of an immigrant. Like, that's one of the very big aspects of the movie. You know, the director, one of the directors, Daniel Kwan, he understands that, and he's communicating that to us as the audience. And to me specifically, like, I felt that connection. So that's exactly the kind of representation that I enjoy, someone who gets it and can sort of explore that and some sort of find some sort of meaning from it. Because, like, there's so many times for me where, like, I got it. Like, I know that feeling, that Joy's feeling, where the mom is just in denial. And mm-hmm. I think that it'll resonate with a lot of people. I actually watched this movie last weekend on my birthday.
Happy birthday.
I know. Thank you. And I watched it at the Alamo Draft House in San Francisco.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. And side story. So my wife asked me, she gave me a choice between this movie and Morbius. And I'm so glad I chose this movie. Two very different movies. But I'm glad we chose this one. And I came into the movie like not knowing really much about it, I just knew that it had Michelle Yeoh, and I watched the trailer. So the plot, it seemed like it was just everywhere based on the trailer. And yeah, I admit I was confused several times at the beginning of the movie. Like for example, the mechanism for reverse jumping, it took me a little while to understand. And yeah, funny story, actually, we took a lift home afterwards and I tried to explain the movie synopsis to the driver, but I was just at a loss of words on how to describe it. I was just like, this is a multiverse war about, you know, immigrants, family dynamics. Just watch it.
Basically, yeah, what I said. So our audience members just know, okay, Baldwin already practiced a synopsis. Mm-hmm, you saw mm-hmm. the things that didn't go off so well, so you refined it just for you all.
Yeah, exactly. Because I would not be able to describe this movie like right out of the theater. So. But yeah, I mean, the parts that were insane and wacky, it always brought me back eventually by being grounded in the relationships of Evelyn's character and her personal journey. And I love the different homages to all those past movies, like The Matrix, In the Mood for Love, and then also Ratatouille.
Raccoonie.
That's so funny too, like Raccoonie, because we all, like, as an immigrant child, we all have like mothers who just mispronounce things, and then that's just what it's called from now on. Like it's Raccoonie.
Yes, exactly. But then it was hilarious actually how they did roll that in. So, and it was a main story, driving storyline.
I know.
So there you go.
Yeah, it was great. Like this film is such a visionary film with all kinds of imagination. I've definitely never seen a movie like it before. And I think this movie really does mean a lot from a diversity standpoint, from what you were saying, because like, when do we ever see a Hollywood movie centered around an aging immigrant woman and then telling her story, like the struggles of her life, the choices that she's made, and her existential crisis, and having it played out like this. I listened to the interview with Michelle Yeoh, and she's describing Evelyn as the everyday woman, the mom, the auntie. Mm-hmm. You walk by every day who's unseen, but she has her own life, just like everybody else, and she feels the weight of the world on her shoulders. Like Michelle Yeoh, like you said, just she's become really just like one of the biggest action and sci-fi actresses of our time. Like she's been in Shang-Chi and Crouching Tiger, obviously, but Absolutely. Also Sunshine. She's starring in the Star Trek Discovery TV show.
Oh my God. I loved watching her. I want to say she was really good as just like an actress, but I really wish they had more fight scenes for her. Mm. And she actually even talked about Star Trek Discovery, how there was one person in particular who wanted to do his own stunts, but he was always just a little too late. And she would tell him, she's like, hey, you're not paying attention. You're coming in a little too late. So as soon as she walks off set and has the double there, that guy punched that double in the face. So she's like, come on, right? Like she takes it very seriously, but she does her homework, but then she also just, you know, surrenders herself, right, to the project. Because she says she's at this age where, like, you know what? If I don't see that you're passionate about it, I'm not even be a part of this, right?
She's such a pro, absolutely. And I also think she's going to be in the new Avatar movies too, which is like just a cherry on top. But yeah, Michelle Yeoh, I think this is more of like the stripped down version of her that we don't really see too often, because she's always the badass in every movie that she's in. So seeing her as vulnerable, relatable, just really like ordinary, like she's not glamorous. That was like really it. She felt like a voice for all the ordinary mothers and wives out there who are just doing ordinary things that get taken for granted. So introducing her that way really sets up her arc and everything that comes afterwards really well. Because this Chinese immigrant woman ends up being a literal superhero in this movie. It's totally unexpected and makes everything that she does in that role like all the more amazing. This 100%, like you said, it felt like a celebration of her career to me. She's been in the industry for over 3 decades, and I think that this is really her first like top billing leading role in a Hollywood movie. Yeah, like in her interview, she says she's been waiting for a role like this for so long. we get to see her versatility and her range as an actress. And we're really reminded that she's been doing this for so long. So just can't really say more about her.
I have to say, as far as characters wise, like the actors all did a phenomenal job of making it believable, mm-hmm. right? And they all have this versatility of being able to verse jump into those characters.
So well. Crazy. Yeah. They all have like these different versions of themselves in the movie. Like Stephanie Hsu, who plays Joy, the daughter, just covers the widest range of character like I've ever seen, from being this like completely vulnerable, you know, daughter of Evelyn to being like this basically God type figure. And then, yes. James Hong, who, by the way, like I realized he's 93 years old.
93.
It's insane. And he's been in hundreds of movies. He's had 8 decades of acting.
I think he counted it and said it was like 400.
Yeah, 400, so. 450 was what I found. It's insane. It's crazy. I think like I remember him the most from Big Trouble in Little China.
In Little Chinatown. Oh my God. That is. And I will say, the interview that I read with James Hong, he says every time he does a film, there is a little bit of his role in those films. And he said, like, basically, Big Trouble in Little Chinatown is the very first multiverse kind of film that he ever did. Because he goes from this, like, older, decrepit, kind of shy, you know, man to this evil overlord, right? Mm-hmm, and so mm-hmm. he has to play those kind of different roles in the same film. And so he was saying, like, hey, I've been ready for this for a long time.
Yeah, I know. It was perfect for the role. It's crazy. And
he was also in Turning Red as well. So he plays shaman there. So you guys need to watch Turning Red. Man. He's in so many films you don't even know, right? 450. How could he be able to do it? He's been a voice actor. He's as well. So, you know, guys, like, he's absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. And he always brings his all, even if sometimes it's maybe not the best film or you know, whatever project he's working on. But I am so happy to see, and that's the thing. This film, Stephanie Hsu, she didn't really realize she was actually like the youngest cast member in this film. She didn't really let it process. And really what I loved about this film is that it had all of these much older actors coming in and just giving it their all. And that's so rare to see, really. Mm. You normally see these action films being relegated to these super buff, you know, big names. I mean, like Jamie Lee Curtis, Michelle Yeoh, like those are really big names. Right? But sure. I mean, but normally it's like younger, like people who have a specific look, or, you know, gigantic boobs and all this other stuff, right? Like, you know, and that's not what this is. This is, you know, older with wrinkles and just like, you know, just like all the ugliness and things like that.
I totally agree. Yeah. It's rare that you watch an action movie, especially with like a Michelle Yeoh action movie, and the action wasn't really like the highlight of the movie, although mm-hmm. I loved it and it was mm-hmm. like super good, and especially how they made it comedic. But what really like captured my attention was the emotional journey of the story. Like that was like what I was looking forward to seeing the most. So I totally agree.
So Daniels found Stephanie Hsu because she happened to be starring in Nora from Queens with Awkwafina in one episode. And it was like from the first season, I think it was like the 9th or 8th episode. And so it's like this flashback scene actually with Nora's grandma. And so she plays in it. So she acts, but then she also like raps. And it's a really weird, like, so it's the Fever Dream sequence too. And they just happened to be recording that episode. And so it's interesting because Stephanie Hsu is actually in Shang-Chi. So if you didn't recognize this, she is the friend that they meet at the bar who says, you guys could be doing so much more with your life if you just applied yourself. That's the same person.
Way. Oh, shit.
And when I told my husband that, he's all like, what? She was in Shang-Chi? And then he's like, that was such a forgettable character.
Mm-hmm.
So she had been living in New York. She met them. And then she's like, you know what? After being, you know, doing acting or whatever, she was in Marvelous Miss Maisel as well.
Yeah.
And so she's like, I want to get out of New York. I'm going to go to LA. And just happened to go there. They're like, hey, we have this thing. We think, the dance said to her, I think you'd be perfect for it if you were into it. She's like, anything with you guys, for sure. So she goes and she actually does audition still, even though they basically gave it to her. And they're like, she was so crazy. Definitely said things during the audition you probably should never say, but she would go between all these different characters, all like back to back. She'd start fake crying, and then she would like be laughing and hysterical, and then manic, and then coming back. And the fact that she was able, and they were like, she was bouncing off walls and doing these crazy things. They're like, she's perfect for this role. So. Mm-hmm. It's so great to be able to see, because also, you know, she's also not like your stereotypical Asian waify kind of person you would see in films, absolutely. Either, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I love that. I just felt like I felt really seen, because like it's not to take away from, you know, these, you know, very slender Asian women who are amazing, beautiful people as well, but also being able to see more nuance and body types for Asian representation, that also really helps a lot too.
Yeah, I totally agree. I really hope we see like more of her in the future, because in this movie, she's so talented, just so much range and so compelling too. Just like you said, like the whole range of different personalities, like the confidence versus the vulnerability, is just really like captured my attention. So I love that. I definitely agree.
And another one that I really liked was Ki Kwan coming back after 2 decades of not being in film. He actually had hired a couple of different coaches, like an acting coach, one other coach, I can't remember. And then he said a body language coach. Mm. And so the body language coach took the script and then broke it out to these different types of waymans, and then associated different animals to them.
I read that too. The normal, or the one in the present universe, is a squirrel, right? The squirrel. Yes. Raymond. It's that's totally true. I totally see that.
Exactly. An alpha wayman is an eagle.
Yeah.
And then CEO wayman is a fox, right? Sly. And you, oh my gosh, definitely is a fox.
Absolutely.
But yes, so what was great was like what he was saying was like, yeah, so every little thing that I did when I was a squirrel, I watched countless hours of squirrel videos. I ate like a squirrel. I thought like a squirrel. I moved like a squirrel. I had pictures, a whole wall of just printed photos of squirrels. And I'm sure my wife hated it because she'd walk into the room and just see squirrels everywhere. So, but he really took it seriously, and he did such a great job. I love when they were, when the Daniels were breaking down the scene about how like, there was like this filing cabinet that was placed in between as a barrier, and you know, Wayman and Evelyn were basically just talking to each other through there. They were saying they could have put apple boxes underneath them so you can be able to see their face. Mm-hmm. But they said this goes back to just how amazing of actors they are, that they could act with their eyes. Mm-hmm. And it really was the case, because when it was Alpha Wayman, he was very chill, calm, relaxed. And then when he went away, and then it was present day Wayman came back. Yeah. He was like, ah, you're like, what's going on? The eyes,
with the little voice. Yeah. And yes. It's awesome. And then I also read that there's some parts too, since it was filmed during the pandemic, where they couldn't actually like film together. So like the scene in the car where they have to talk about their divorce, like they were just talking to like a blank wall, and they had to like film those parts separately. So I mean, the like just the commitment to these roles and the work that they did, just so amazing. The performance is like absolutely, absolutely great. I really loved it.
Yeah. For that one in particular, Michelle was like, the confusion that you see in that film coming from me, I was literally confused. I'm like, what's he doing? Yeah. What am I saying? Why? Uh-huh. Like,
yeah. And it shows in the film, like that's exactly like how she's supposed to be, because she doesn't understand what's happening in the multiverse at that point in time. So
exactly. So it really played into it really well. Okay. So who is your favorite version of each one? Okay. So let's start with maybe the easier one. Deirdre, played by the incorrigible Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah.
Who is your favorite version?
Okay, this one I think is a little bit easier for me. Definitely the hot dog fingered version of her. Because she
so talented.
Yeah, she's actually a very, very nice version of her character in that universe. And she can play, you know, Claire de Lune on the piano with her with her toes. So yeah.
Okay, my favorite version of Deirdre has to be the WWE version where she does the backbreaking. Oh my gosh, she was so hilarious. I love that.
Yeah, she is great.
All right, so who is your favorite Waymond?
Oh gosh, Waymond. Is it the squirrel, the eagle, or the fox? I know what you're going to say. So I'm going to say definitely the eagle version where he's super confident. He knows exactly what he's doing and he's like leading the charge of the war. Yeah, I love that version. And I love the fact that he could actually like fight really well too. Like he beat everybody's ass up in that IRS building. That was hilarious.
It was perfect. Okay. So as much as I have a lot of heart for the present day Wayman, yes, my favorite is the fox.
Yes.
Is CEO Wayman.
Sexy
and Wayman. Yes, sexy Wayman. And you know, I'll just go ahead and go into it. It is my favorite scene. That whole sequence, yes, is perfect. But my favorite scene was when it took it to a whole other octane actually in the film, which was crazy because you would think, how can it go any more than already? When he says to Evelyn, for what it's worth, I wish I could have just been doing taxes and laundry with you.
Yeah.
And it was like, oof, it just hits. Right? it just hits, right? And so what's interesting is like Evelyn loves her husband. I don't think that's ever denied here. I think they actually both love each other, but I think he needs a little bit more than what she's giving. But at that moment when he says that to her, she hits a flood of emotions, all the things that they had done, why she loves her husband. And he reminds her, right? Please no more, be kind. And he says, what are you doing right after that film? And she's like, I'm learning to fight like you. And it was just like, oh my gosh. It was just like that love and pouring into it. And it was just like, so perfect. You know? So yeah, that's my favorite scene. Okay. Now, Jobu Tabaki / Joy. Which one is your favorite version of her? Or maybe just outfit. Because she's basically kind of the same, right?
Gosh.
But she does have a lot of range.
It's so hard to choose. I mean, I really enjoyed like both versions of her where she's Jobu Tabaki.
Yeah.
She's this like awesome ass-kicking person, super badass. And she has this like so much confidence in her and the world is basically hers. But also like the very, very vulnerable daughter of Evelyn where all she wants to do is just connect with her mom. Like I felt that. And she has this yearning for her relationship with her mom that's also sort of resulted in regret but anger and resentment and shame and indignation of her. So I definitely like enjoyed all versions of Evelyn.
All versions? What a cop out.
Joy. I know. It's so hard. You just sprung this up on me. I got to think about it more.
Sorry. Okay. My favorite outfit then. Maybe you can come back to it. But my favorite outfit of hers is definitely pink haired Elvis with her pet pig.
Oh, yeah. That was so funny.
That or Luchadora, where she has like this, where she like basically grabs this guy and just like boom, and pile drive. Is that? Yeah, exactly. I mean, like he's dead, but you know, it was a great move. But I will definitely say, I think my favorite version of Joy was when she was Jobu Tabaki in that scene right outside of, so this is after the IRS and police come and she's, she's detained and they said, fine, go ahead and let her go. And she basically stands up to her baba, her dad, and says, this is Joy's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And Joy is so humiliated and just runs out, right? That version of Joy right there. That just that whole scene, it was like everything culminated up into that, and I had snot bubbles. I was crying so bad from that that scene. So I don't know about anyone else, but that was
wonderful.
So anyway, that's my favorite Joy.
That I want to go. Yeah, that scene is just so, so powerful. Like, that's the scene where I started to, you know, get a little bit of water in my eye, just because they are, it's so real, right? Yeah. That is the Jobu Tsubaki that is like omnipotent, but in there, she's super vulnerable and yeah. she's just trying to connect with her mom. And then like Evelyn, Michelle Yeoh's character, she doesn't see that at first, but then she takes the time to take in that moment and she chooses to be there in that moment with her daughter and, you know, sympathize with her, be with her and connect with her. So I totally see what you, like that scene right there is the best.
Absolutely. I need you all to understand. I basically had to watch this movie twice and talk about this scene 4 or 5 times to get it all out of me, because I would pause and choke up even just coming approaching this, right? And part of it was like the lead up into it is Michelle goes and tells her dad, "How could you let me go so easily?" Yeah. And then I know, right? And you didn't fight for me. And she tried. She tried so hard to reconnect to her father, but it was it. Her father said, "You're dead to me." And it was just like, ugh, gut wrenching there. And then tit for tat, he's so invalid that he has to be taken care of by his daughter, but does not remember anything other than that she's aimless and doesn't and runs away and never finishes things, right? Like, that's how he sees her daughter. Mm-hmm. And then for her then to go and say to Jobu, "Why did you do that? Why are you doing this?" And she's like, why would I always come to find my mom? You know, like, in her mind, it's so simple. Everyone else is like, sees it as just like this omnipotent evil person. And she always is killing Evelyn in every multiverse. And that's just not it at all. Like, she's waiting, looking for the perfect Evelyn to be able to walk through the center of the everything bagel.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, like, I think because I've been Jobu in the sense that, you know, maybe I had a partner who I loved, but everything was still meaningless. It wasn't until Evelyn becomes a mother and she's like, she knows she has to live more than just for herself. And I think this is something that's that extra layer, like if you're a parent. So that's what Daniel Kwan said. He started off writing the script as an Evelyn and he went through so many different stages of his life to where he went, you know, then he got married, then he had a kid. And by the end of it, he says that he ended the making the film being more empathetic towards Evelyn, because you know, there's that extra layer of not of knowing that it's not just as simple of everything sucks, because it's not just that anymore. Now it's like, I will always want to be near you, you know. So it's just like that love that you have and for your child, and that's why it was so hard for. And so, like, I would definitely say, like, I've talked to a couple of other people who've had like a really bad relationship with their parents, and sometimes they say it's just easier if they thought their parents was already dead. You know, it was like that to that point. And it was like, you know, it's sad. It's sad that you never get a chance to kind of repair your relationship before the end of it, you know, before your parent dies or something. So it's just like, I know for me personally, you know, for anyone who like listens to the episodes and know kind of my relationship with my parents, it definitely has kind of continue to shift. I still don't really have like a open relationship with my parents as like I would want it to be, and I wish that things were different, but you know, my parents are still alive, maybe there's still a chance. And so kind of like with what happens with Evelyn, in that she has kind of this second chance with her dad, because she's taking care of him, like the point is that she still has this love, this tenderness. And even if she is a little bit squirrely mind herself, right? Like, they say that they actually were thinking of this movie as like Evelyn having ADHD in that sense, like really hard to kind of pin down where you are and always kind of off in a different world. And, you know, part of it is that she is still really caring, really loving, and still full of potential. So, yeah.
And I think like a lot of people would connect with that too, in the same way you do with their relationship with their parents. And it goes back to that theme of generational divide and trauma that's super present in the movie. Yeah, like we said, from Evelyn's relationship with Joy, but also relationship with her father, super complicated. And then, so just to explain, Gong Gong never wanted Evelyn to marry Wayman, he felt That's like right. she's wasted her potential. And all Evelyn wants to do is sort of please her father. And I think that these type of relationships and family dynamics are super common in Asian households. And it's like all we see in our family members sometimes is how we or how they compare to our expectations of them, right? And so especially for immigrant children, it's hard to see family members as three-dimensional people. Because all we see are like our mom or our daughter or whatever. So communication across generations is just one of the most difficult things in Asian families. So when we see the relationship with Joy and her mom, we see that she really wants to connect with her, but it's so hard to cross that divide and find a way to make her mom understand her and see her really. So I like you said, definitely connect with that. And I'm sure so many immigrant families do too. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it comes with so much anger sometimes and resentment. And I thought that it was great how they addressed that in the movie and the message that although the communication might be broken, what never goes away is the love and loyalty from family and acceptance from the flaws of the people that you love is such a huge message in the movie. But also, like we talked about this, the idea of regret, like feeling like you've done nothing with your life and have regrets. Right. The movie did a really great job of exploring this feeling. We see Evelyn's life and her reaction to all the things around her. And she's just in like complete denial, right? About her failing business, her failing marriage, and the strained relationship with Joy. And especially about Joy being gay and having a girlfriend. She like just thinks that it's a phase. It's like, I feel like that's a familiar situation for a lot of immigrant mothers, the denial aspect, how they just push through all the struggle and noise in their life through sheer will and ignoring anything else that's unrelated or doesn't fit into the world or the views. Like even when Waymond had his divorce papers and mm-hmm. prepared that for her, like he didn't do that for the purpose of ending the marriage. He really just wanted to like
have a conversation.
Yeah. Force Evelyn to have a real conversation about their relationship. And yeah, I think the point of showing all these different versions of herself and all of the regrets is that it's trying to say you can't live and dwell on those regrets because it's going to affect yourself and the people around you. So like no matter what universe you're in, you can't keep thinking what if. You have to be present because life is wasted if it isn't. And that scene too, the ending of the movie is so poignant, I thought, because she says like she could be in any of the universes where she's successful or another person. But in the end, when her daughter really needed her, she was able to come to that realization that she's choosing to be there with her daughter in that moment. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's what makes life meaningful. With all the regrets and dreams you might have, there's still the life that's right in front of you, the one that you've chosen and the one that you've led. And, you know, like that's the grand old question, what's the meaning of life? But isn't it meaningful to just be there in that moment with your child and share that connection? Isn't it meaningful to get married and share a life with your partner? Isn't it like if you've lived all of your life to get to a certain moment, isn't it worth it to share that experience? So I really just connected with that message right there.
Oh my God. Snaps all around. Oh my God. That was phenomenal. Thank you, everyone. That's it. Thank you. That's it. Baldwin with his mic drops. You guys, exactly.
Yeah. But that's like the feeling I got at the end of that movie. Like, yes. That's something I've always felt about life. Like, there's always going to be spiritual overtones. There's always going to be like some outside external motivations. But to me, when you get that really grounded sense of just like being present in the moment and living your life, it's like basically everybody has a choice to, make their own choices and see where their life may lead. And that's like the point of everything, really.
I really couldn't have put a better point on it. Okay, then. So that was super heavy and super dense. So we're going to pull back just a teeny bit. What was your favorite Evelyn? That's the last character we didn't get a chance to. So what was your favorite Evelyn?
Gosh. It's that one. That's even like the hardest question out of
exactly. Out of that's all why we waited to the very end.
Can we say the Evelyn that's like experienced all of those universes and like lived finally like who's in the present universe, but she's gained all the experiences of the other of the alternate universes. So the Evelyn that's in the end, and she's able to you know, confront herself really, right? And all of her flaws and misgivings, and comes to terms with them, and then makes the choice and makes the realization of actually reconciling things with her father, with Waymond, and with Joy, especially. Second place though is definitely the metamorphic rock with the googly eyes.
Yes, the googly eyes.
Where they had such they had like a super meaningful conversation as rocks for sure.
I know, it was so moving. I can't tell you. So like I kind of do like that with my daughters too. Sometimes my youngest especially, she gets really emotional and just kind of lashes out. And so the best way to kind of bring her back in is to just be really weird and silly. And that's kind of how I approach it too. It's just like, I'm going to get you, right? And it's just like that aspect of it is... Just
takes you out of the moment that like all the emotions, right?
Yes, exactly. Because sometimes... it's fine to go ahead and be in your feelings, but also at the same time, it's also good to know, like, to pull back and be like, hey, but you know what? The thing that we can be, you know, appreciative right now is us in this moment together, right? So, yeah, I definitely like that. I would say, like, okay, so I'll take your first one, right? Your first one, sure, that's, like, absolutely. Close second for me would probably be Rekkakuni version of
that. That was so awesome. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I am so amazed how they pulled that off in that movie and just made it work so well. Harry Shum played the chef.
Shout out to Harry Shum Jr.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they had the raccoon on his head, literally like pulling the strings. And then she like reports the raccoon, and the raccoon gets taken away on like a pet
animal services.
Yeah, animal services. Yeah. And then they're just like chasing them.
It's so good. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And yeah, so my favorite scene though from the Evelyn that is all Evelyn's put together was when she's going up the stairs and doing the different thing for each person to make them like
whole again.
To make them whole again. And especially the one that my husband really related to was the guy who had to have like the chiropractic thing. And he's like, thank you. And he's so grateful.
Yeah, I was like, that's all it took.
Exactly. It was perfect. I love that so much. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then let's go ahead and end this episode with MVPs. I'll go ahead and go first. My MVP has to be James Hong. I'm really sorry. I love Michelle Yeoh and Ke Kwan and all of them. But James Hong really came in and just leaned in 100%. And if it wasn't for him, I don't think this entire movie would have been possible, because he is the catalyst for which Evelyn feels like she either is a failure or someone who prospered.
Right.
You can see him in every scene being either the completely dejected father or the completely committed father, where even as Michelle Yeoh's character Evelyn as an opera singer, he was there in the wings to be able to catch her, but also in the sense there were parts of him who felt like, you know, maybe he felt like she didn't live up to his full potential in his mind of who she should have been. And without that conflict, that hero's journey, that movie would not be possible. So MVP, James Hong, this character.
Yeah, I could totally feel that. Okay, so my MVP is, I would say it's Waymond, because like he's the one who actually confronts Evelyn and forces her to start that journey. And then like Alpha Waymond, Squirrel Waymond, and CEO Waymond, they were all like dope characters. And they're really like the soundboard to Evelyn, like with everything going on in Evelyn's life, like it's all sort of determined by like his reaction or his relationship to her. And like he allows her to see the different sides that she's missing. So I definitely think Waymond is my MVP.
That's perfect. I think that perfectly encapsulates the film, because he is the bridge between the mother and daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really great. All right, so we're going to end it there, everyone. If you love great fighting choreography, if you love drama, if you love comedy, go see Everything Everywhere All at Once. And if you've already seen it, then thank you so much. And definitely check out some more of our other episodes of Real Asian Podcast. Peace.
Absolutely. Bye.